Good morning, everyone. My name is Representative Spencer Igo from the Iron Range, and I have the privileged chair of the House Housing Committee of the Minnesota House. Today, we as a group of Republicans and Democrats stand together in addressing the issue that is core of every Minnesota community, housing. Whether you live in St. Paul, up on the range, in the suburbs, or in southern Minnesota, our communities need and are asking for more housing. In fact, you can make the argument that housing has become a top three issue for most people, regardless of their party. This is an issue of one that is close to home for me. Since being elected to the legislature in 2020, this is the one issue I hear from friends, peers, colleagues, and constituents. People from all generations want to be homeowners and cannot find and afford homes. Here are the facts. Minnesota is down over 100,000 housing units. The median age for buying your first home is now 38 years old, and the average mortgage is over $2,500 a month. Today, we are announcing bills that are going to get at the root of this issue, and that is more homes. I am proud to be carrying the Starter Home Act portion of the package. They'll be working to deliver the starter homes that Minnesota needs by cutting regulations that have stood in the way of certain types of development. The idea is nothing new. Red states and blue states across the country are implementing similar policies and are seeing results. You could argue this is returning us to the way things used to be. Our neighborhoods were built on starter homes that were built on the return of our veterans from World War II that created the communities that we live in today. It is time to bring those homes back and revitalize homeownership for all in our state. The entire bill package today is the culmination of ideas and policies that, when combined, will accomplish three things. First, it will provide and allow for diversity in housing. We need all the options possible for all Minnesotans. From single-family homes to duplexes to condos to multifamily homes, this housing diversity will work to drive down the cost of homes in our communities and restore affordability. Diversity and affordability, when combined, give the opportunity for Minnesotans to achieve an institutional framework of our state and nation, homeownership. The ability to attain homeownership yields stability, and that stability for our families, communities, and our state. Thank you. Next will be Senator Port.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess. It's still morning. I am Senator Lindsay Port. I represent District 55 in Burnsville and Savage. As I've said many times in the past 2 years, and I'll say it again, we are in a housing crisis. Minnesota is 114,000 housing units below what we need. And if we wait to take action, or every moment we wait to take action, we fall further behind. Everyone in every community across Minnesota is spending more on housing and less on education, food, and healthcare because we just don't have enough housing. We hear it from our constituents and local officials, and we see it in data across Minnesota. Minnesotans are feeling the hurt in their quality of life and in their bank accounts. Whether you have to live an hour away from where you work or choose between paying rent and buying groceries, or can't afford a place to live at all, the crisis has real consequences for the way that we live. People want to move to Minnesota. It's our job to make sure that there's stable housing for the Minnesotans who already live here and the future Minnesotans we're welcoming into our state. Seniors should be able to downsize their homes and stay in their communities. First-time homebuyers should be able to buy a starter home in the town where they grew up. And as their families grow, they should be able to live and raise families in the same neighborhood. What you've heard from Minnesotans and from our city and county leaders is that there are too many barriers in building homes that we need. Every time a development hits a red light, the price tag goes up. Labor costs go up. Material costs go up. Permitting costs go up. And that means more expensive homes for Minnesotans. The Yes to Homes legislation will remove these barriers and open the doors to the housing that we need. These bills will streamline zoning processes that bog down development. They will reduce building time and costs and help towns and cities across Minnesota build the types of homes that are right for their communities. When we break down these barriers, it's good for our communities, good for business, and good for growth across the state. The Yes to Homes legislation will give Minnesotans the freedom to afford a home in the community of their choice.
Thank Hi, I am Sean Nelson, and I am a licensed billing contractor in the state of Minnesota with an office in Burnsville. I also have the privilege and honor of serving on the Bloomington City Council. I do want to just state that this is not Bloomington City Council's specific policies, but I want to talk to what we've done in Bloomington. First, I would note that 44% of the housing of the homes built in Bloomington were built in the 1950s. We said yes to housing when our veterans and heroes came back to our community, and we've done that throughout the state. We need to do that again now. In 2018, a governor's task force, an independent group, found that there are over 50,000 homes short in the state of Minnesota. That has more than doubled in that time. We're going backwards, and we need to take action now in order to stop that trend. We all hear about inflation. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, over half of the inflation amount that we are seeing is due to shelter costs. We are hurting all of the people in our communities by burdening them with high costs of housing. In Bloomington, we have taken action on these issues. We started a few years ago with the Opportunity Housing Ordinance, where we streamlined our processes, we reduced barriers, we reduced regulations, we reduced aesthetic mandates, parking things, all of those things to make it easier to build apartments and homes in the city of Bloomington. We went further with that, and we modernized our zoning code. We reduced lot size requirements, setback requirements, number of garages, things of that nature that we know are driving the cost burden of housing, so that in Bloomington you can build a single-family house that someone can afford. We are a fully built-out community, and so finding locations for that was critical for us, and that's why we went with that zoning reform. We have worked with our planning department in order to streamline our approval processes. If a developer comes to Bloomington with a plan that meets all the requirements, there's no need for them to go to a separate commission meeting, go to a council meeting. They should get approval. That's what we're doing in Bloomington. And now we're working on the missing middle, and that's what our initiative is for this year, which is, you know, triplexes, quads, things of that nature, so that we're finding the right locations for those. In particular, existing commercial nodes, so we can revitalize those parts of our community and provide housing and support those local businesses that have their shops and their restaurants in those commercial nodes. This can be done, it is being done, but we aren't going to get there by just having a few cities do this. We need the entire state behind this initiative, just like we did before. We need to build all sorts of housing, whether it's for young people trying to buy their first house and whether or not that's a condo or a single family house. We need apartments for people that may not want to stay in the community forever because of their job situation. And importantly, we need places for our seniors to go. You know, many of them are looking for new types of housing, and we need to have those opportunities available for them as well. So I encourage everyone to say yes to more housing, yes to our future. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nancy Eder. I am a retired teacher. I live in a co-op in Robbinsdale and pay over half my income to my homeowners association. I'm not able to help my son, who struggles to find a job that pays enough for him to rent an apartment. Rents have been rising much faster than wages for some time now. Just from 2000 to 2022, the median rent in the metro rose from $684 to $1,329 and is now $1,521 in Robbinsdale. Wages have definitely not more than doubled during this time. Home prices have increased even faster. Robbinsdale is full of small 1 to 1.5 story homes on small lots. These should represent the so-called NOA, or naturally occurring affordable homes, starter homes for young families. But in these times, these homes are priced out of range for many wage-earning families. Young couples wanting to start a family are forced to seek housing far out of the metro, meaning they will spend hours traveling to and from work, increasing their carbon emissions and lowering our air quality. One reason for all of this is a shortage of housing that drives up the price. Builders say they can't afford to build affordable homes or apartments, partly because of restrictive zoning, We know that zoning has been used to keep out certain races or classes of people. In some areas, it is still used to restrict people of low income from living there. But the shortage of housing hurts all of us. We need to work together to allow for creative solutions to this problem. We need to build affordable homes and rental units so that workers can live close to their jobs and lower carbon emissions. More people in our communities means less urban sprawl taking up valuable farm and parkland, more customers from local businesses, and more taxes for local needs and amenities. It is time to relook at restrictive zoning.
Good morning, I'm Jordan Rasmussen, Senator from Fergus Falls. In Minnesota, currently, the median cost of a new single-family home is over $540,000. And that puts homeownership out of reach for many hardworking Minnesotans. That is why I'm proud to be a part of this bipartisan group of legislators to champion the Minnesota Starter Home Act and the other reforms that we're talking about today. This proposal focuses on cutting red tape to increase the supply of starter homes, empowering the free market to meet the demand in our communities. By doing so, we can help aspiring Minnesota homeowners and young families achieve the dream of home ownership. The stakes are high in this discussion. When Minnesotans must move farther from jobs, their families, and the communities that they grew up in just to afford a home, it not only impedes their financial stability, but it hamstrings the economic prosperity of all of Minnesota. The ripple effects of the shortage of homes and the higher costs touch every corner of the state, rural, suburban, and urban. Too many Minnesotans are unable to reach the American dream of homeownership because of government policies and overregulation. And it's time for state leaders to take action to eliminate those barriers. And I also just want to thank the leaders who have worked on this on both sides of the aisle, especially Representative Jim Nash and Senator Rich Dreheim for their work on aesthetic mandates. And this is going to be really important work for us to get done this session. And so with that, I'm going to hand it over to Representative Michael Howard to wrap us up. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Michael Howard, and I represent Richfield in Minneapolis in the State House. Whether we are talking to students trying to afford rent, young families trying to buy a home for the first time, or seniors trying to downsize, we hear the same thing, and we hear the same thing in my community, in suburban areas, in greater Minnesota. We hear it all the time, housing costs too damn much. And Minnesotans are right. And this bipartisan group of legislators and this diverse coalition is gonna work hard to do something about it. The Yes to Homes legislative agenda recognizes a few key things. The first is the status quo is not working. As Councilmember Nelson mentioned, just 6 years ago we were 50,000 homes short. Now we're 100,000 homes short. This problem will deepen and worsen unless we take action. Anybody who tells you that what we're doing right now is enough is not telling you the truth. Second, we need a statewide solution to a statewide housing crisis. We have cities all across the state that understand and need and want to build more housing, but no one city alone can tackle this issue. That's why we need state-level reforms for a state-level solution. This agenda will jumpstart homes, especially the kinds that Minnesotans are desperate to find, affordable starter homes, affordable places to live that are connected to their community, connected to corridors of commerce. This is smart planning and smart development that will make a difference, and it's what Minnesotans are asking us to do. Lastly, I just want to say that, you know, we have a closely divided legislature, and this is a golden opportunity for us to work together to do something meaningful that all Minnesotans are asking for. Look at these legislators. We represent urban, suburban, greater Minnesota, corner to corner. Representative Nash and I were sparring just 5 minutes ago in committee. And yet we recognize that addressing our housing shortage is priority number one. This team is ready to get to work. And I'll also mention, we have an amazing and growing coalition. If you look at the organizations that are supporting our Yes to Homes agenda, you'll never see a more diverse group of, there's logos up there that have never been that close to each other before. And we are prepared to work together and listen to Minnesotans and move an agenda that will build more homes. When this legislature says yes to homes, more Minnesotans can say yes to the American dream. And this broad, diverse group of legislators are ready to make it so. And with that, we'll take questions.
Are there questions if we don't have bills? So are we going to see the details? It wasn't the top lines that sank this last year. It was the details.
I believe we have copies of language that we can get you.
Is this all? Four-page bill is your entire package?
So that is the Minnesota Starter Home Act. Other pieces of legislation we continue to work with stakeholders, and they'll be introduced either this week or early next week and heard in committee soon after.
For reducing rent inflation, I mean, how is zoning supposed to, can someone walk me through how that would work? What's to prevent sort of a property owner from just going up to whatever the rent stabilization law might be for their locality and raising the rates that?
Sure, it's a great question. We saw over the last several years rent increases skyrocket across the country. And there were a few pockets of places where it did not go up that amount. Most places we saw a double-digit increase, at least 10%. But in Minneapolis, which had opened zoning and had built more units, we saw a much smaller increase. I think it was around 4%. So that is the sort of part of the pressure that we're seeing and part of the ability for landlords to raise their rents, the highest amount that the market can take, is because renters don't have a choice. They don't have anywhere else to go. They can't choose a different apartment. And so supply is a big part of that. And it's one of the ways that we can help to make sure that people have a choice on where they can live and that there are enough units to meet demand, which right now we are far, far below. And so this bill helps to remove some of those barriers to building rent, building multifamily in corridors of commerce, close to things where people need to live their lives anyway, and also opens up opportunities for duplexes, triplexes, and quadplexes, which are both homeownership opportunities, but also rental opportunities that fit the needs of Minnesotans who might not just need a one-bedroom apartment.
Governor Waltz told a group of mayors last year that he's skeptical of preemption. Do you have an idea of where Governor Waltz sits on this issue today?
What the governor has said and the commissioner of housing has said is that he welcomes the opportunity to sign a bipartisan bill. And you see this bipartisan coalition ready to get to work. I'd also mention that if you listen to candidate Governor Waltz on the campaign trail, he was singing the praises of communities in Minnesota that have taken this issue head on. So I think there's quite a bit of opportunity to work with the governor to pass this legislative agenda.
We had opposition last year that I guess probably eventually kept these bills from passing, local governments among others. What's changed? Obviously, we don't have the language, so what's changed this year that makes them more likely to oppose this?
I would say a couple things. It's a really good question. What has changed? One thing I would mention is that after last legislative session, we didn't stop working. We met over the summer, fall, winter with city groups and have this session on a weekly basis. My joke is that I think I've spent more time with city lobbyists in the last year than I have with my own family. And so we have worked to understand the nuance of these issues and have really valued the input we've received from cities. It's partly why we have a more targeted approach with a specific bill on starter homes, a specific bill on the housing types connected to corridors of commerce, a specific bill on aesthetic mandates like Representative Nash is leading on. And so we're working and continue to work. And our hope is that we, you know, we know there's some tension, but through that tension, we think we can improve these bills. And we've appreciated the city's input along the way.
Are there changes from last year's sort of push?
Very much so. These are completely different bills.
What are those?
Yes. So the last year we basically had two large bills. This year we have many. So the Starter Home Act focuses exclusively on legalizing duplexes, townhomes, and ADUs. Last year we had a missing middle bill that I think went up to 10 units. And so this is quite a bit different. And we also, our missing middle bill, which is our More Homes in the Right Places Act, is more focused on more housing opportunities along corridors where it makes the most sense, and also is done in a way that gives cities the choice about where it makes the most sense for this to occur. That's one thing that we heard loud and clear from cities, is that we want to have more choice and to apply these reforms in the way that makes sense for our communities, and these bills reflect that.
Go ahead, Mary.
Thank you. Do you plan to, and maybe the budget is restricting this, but when these bills drop, do you anticipate that any amount of state funding will come with those bills? It looks like mostly policy reform. But
the really nice thing about these bills is they are straight policy. Every single one of our proposals is simply policy changes. There is no fiscal impact on them. The fiscal impact will be to Minnesotans who are able to actually buy homes, and that housing will be able to be built, but there's no fiscal cost to the state with any of these bills. And the first three will be introduced tomorrow, at least in the Senate, but I think also in the House.
No local impact.
So is there anything to
address? And there's no local impact.
Is there anything in them to address the increased stress on city services, for example?
That's another issue that we worked with last year, and these bills are all crystal clear. If we are not going to force a housing development where the infrastructure does not support it. So there's a clear indication in these bills that cities have that ability, because we would not want to force that type of that kind of development. I would say there's a bill that I'm co-authoring with Chair Igo that would provide investments to greater Minnesota communities for their public infrastructure. We know in particular in greater Minnesota, that's a key issue. I don't know if Spencer or Jordan want to talk about their communities with that, but we do know their public infrastructure issues, and the state can have a role to support that effort.
It sounds like fiscal impact to me.
Yes, that would cost money.
Do you have a multifamily affordable housing and commercial zoning bill this year? Maybe the sponsor last year could.
Yes, we have the, well, in your packets, what we're really working to do is to transform Main Streets. We have communities from Delano to Duluth to Ely and all over who are clamoring for housing of all types, workforce, affordable. And so this bill is actually largely the same. We reached a really great place with the many folks that we worked with and some tweaks in this bill. But largely that this bill would allow for a multifamily that's rental units as well as condos, rental and home ownership opportunities, where zones are already commercially zoned.
And what do you do about the issue that keeps coming up, which is that multifamily building, an affordable building, should be allowed, but somehow when it gets to city approval, it isn't allowed. Or it takes so long that it becomes unforced. You tried to get at that before. Did you found a place to get there so the cities aren't going to eat your lunch?
Sure. Well, I hope everybody can have free lunch, but that's another space. but yeah, that's a lot of the work that Senator and our representatives have talked about, doing work with cities and counties and many different coalition groups from the summer and into the fall. And where we've reached is making sure that market rate and affordable aren't treated differently. As we know, when projects come forward, so oftentimes there are added barriers, added costs in that process. And so this is just making sure that we have a uniform approval process. One thing that we've added in this year, we heard really loud and clear in wanting to make sure we strike that balance of public process. So that will be an added element that I want to make sure we are not cutting out public process. As somebody who comes from community side, that is one of the most important elements. It's also really important that we front load and make sure that we're listening to all voices, but making sure that we have reasonable and dependable time periods for those approval processes. Still needs to go through the building code, the fire code, follow all state, federal zoning laws and those types, but making sure that in the process, we are not weeding out affordable projects, which we heard from our seniors, from our young families who are looking for a place to lay their head and have a warm place to dream at night for their futures.
Do you have a source of income bill this year? I saw that there's a Senate bill. Is that part of the package?
That's not part of this package, but there will be a bill for that.
Is there any sense of priority between all of these bills for some of them over the other ones?
I would say that the maximum impact is this entire legislative agenda, and we've been really purposeful in working with a coalition of folks to build a legislative package that's addressing the real root issues of our housing shortage. Each of these bills and each of these issues are critical, and so to maximize our impact, we really hope to move this agenda together, despite the fact that we have bills that are kind of targeting different problems.
And I will say that we also sort of opened multiple doors with some of these bills. The Starter Home Act, for instance, and the multifamily bill also include, or the Starter Home Act includes the aesthetic mandates piece as well as a parking piece that is specific to sort of the starter home type of housing. And so we're bringing that discussion in with every bill. We also have a straight aesthetic mandate bill and a straight parking bill that is sort of broader. But we're keeping the conversations tied together as much as is possible.
All of you standing here, though, support all seven of these bills. Is that accurate?
I see a lot of nods.
Yeah. Okay. Last year, when push came to shove, there were very few Republican votes for these bills in committee. I may have missed it, but it was a key vote when Senator Port's bill died. There were no Republican votes to help get that out of committee. So can you address the difference between standing here and actually voting in tough situations to move bills?
Jim Nash, District 48A. I'll say we are about as tied as you're going to ever get in the legislature right now. And I think that the members behind us, or behind me, are on the same page. I think that we're going to work very hard to convince the people that we sit next to in committee and sit next to on the floor. I think the one thing that you're also not hearing that you heard last year is a lot of the cities are now finally realizing they've got a housing problem on their hands. And for the first time that I can remember, they're coming to us and saying, yeah, you're right. We know that we're not building enough homes. I think with that acknowledgement, you'll also see people who have maybe had problems with the bills in the past are going to recognize that my kids, your grandkids, other people's kids can't buy a house in the state that they were raised in. And the conversations that I've had with a lot of municipal groups has been, we understand that we have to have some change. And I think when they begin acknowledging that, that's going to open up the doors for a lot of people who have had some reservations in the past to put up a strong vote for it.
Is there still hesitancy among some of your colleagues?
You've met legislators, right?
There's hesitancy on every bill. And that's part of the legislative process, is working through the different things. All of us, again, look at who you have up here. You've got people who are progressives and conservatives and everything in between. And we are all, as Chair Howard said, he and I were duking it out 20 minutes ago. And yet we are locking arms on this issue. That's the most remarkable thing I think that you should take away from this. As I have said in the past, housing is a North Star issue. Every person needs to find their way home. Like my kid in the Navy always told me, I know I can go home to our North Star in Waconia. There are so many people that don't have that opportunity right now. So Republicans and Democrats and progressives and liberals are all saying, let's fix this, and we're going to work together to make sure that it happens.
Hi, Glenn. I'm Representative Larry Kraft. I represent St. Louis Park. And I want to go back to a question about what's different this year. So we've done a lot of engagement with cities. This issue, the visibility to this issue, I think partially based on what we did last year and the national conversation, has really been uplifted. And there's some phenomenal work by cities happening in Minnesota. In addition to what you heard in Bloomington, I did a tour down in Rochester. Man, they're doing, you know, doing some phenomenal stuff, all kinds of different kinds of housing coming up, and they're doing it in administrative approval. So when someone wants to build it, they know that if they follow the rules, they can do it in a couple months, they can get the permits. And even for multifamily buildings, great stuff. My own community of St. Louis Park, a couple weeks ago, legalized triplexes throughout the community. So I think we're seeing the recognition and the city's taking action and also realizing, I've talked to some, you know, we're doing our part, but we want others to do their part too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.